guys, it looks like the hallways look pretty much clear enough, so I think this is going to be the majority of us tonight. Thank you so much for coming. I hope the conference has been treating you so well. My name is Rachel Sims, and I'm here today to talk about creative cash flow for notes. So I've been purchasing notes for about 8 years now, and I truly, truly love this industry, you guys. So when you have traditional financing, you usually need to put so much money down or have such of a credit score or maybe a certain W-2 employment. When you are creating notes or you are doing the owner finance transactions, you are in such a wonderful place to help people who don't have credit over, you know, 600 or don't have that traditional 20% down to put down for their down payment, right? Or you might have I-10 borrowers, or you might have self-employed borrowers who maybe just started their own business. And you're in a great place to be able to help these borrowers obtain homes, first sellers, if you're looking to help them get some capital, maybe pay off debts. So this is a truly, truly great industry to be in, and I'm so happy to be in it. I've been buying notes for about 8 years. I've closed well over 800 loans, and I have spent more than, I think, $60 million of, can you switch up, please? First National Bank of America's money. So I buy and I work with brokers all over the United States, and I actually work with brokers in different countries. So you could get up, maybe move to Canada or New Zealand, and you can still find a way to make income in the States while you're overseas or in a neighboring country. So I buy for First National Bank of America, or First National Acceptance Company, who is a subsidiary of First National Bank of America. We've been a bank for over 75 years. We have been buying notes for a little over 50 years. So we're really excited to hit that milestone for us. We buy in all 50 states. Yes, we buy in New York. Yes, we buy in Alaska. We buy in all of the states performing. So we are going to be the first lien performing note buyer. Contracts are the same things for us. So anyone who's thought of a mortgage, deed of trust, contracts, those are all something that we would be able to consider to purchase. So make money in notes without buying notes. What does that mean? Hi, welcome. Are you here to eat? If you have a ticket, grab some food in the back. Help yourself. So make money in notes without buying notes. What does that mean? So as I said in my introductory, I work with sellers, or I also work with brokers. So this is a great avenue for maybe you hold your own portfolio. You're not looking to sell your entire note. You might want to sell a portion of it, or you originate or still hold notes. But for some reason, a note comes across your desk and it's just not the note you want for your own portfolio. You're welcome to contact us. We're going to create an offer for you. And then you can create your own spread. So we're not going to regulate commissions. If you wanted to take a deal and wanted to make $8,000 to $15,000, we're happy to pay you for that amount as well. Hi. Welcome. You're okay. Take yourself. I know it's kind of a off to the side spot. Sorry about that. So you're welcome to broker notes to us, and we will not regulate your commission. We're excited to work with you. And how are we going to do that? We're going to do it as a team. When you're going to submit a file to us, you're going to know quickly of your buy box of what we're looking for. So we're, again, the first lien performing or reperforming investor. When we say reperforming, if it's a note that's currently 30 days late, that's something we wouldn't be able to purchase. But if the note became current and has stayed current for a time being, that would be considered a reperforming. That's something we'd be looking to purchase. Single family homes are the prime things we're looking for, but we do dabble in, we do dabble in land, mobile homes, and that's mobile homes with land. So not just a mobile, it's a mobile attached with land. Commercial properties, second homes, it might be a vacation home, an Airbnb home. Those are all things that we're willing to consider. good equity, good pay history. Maybe the collateral is not super great, but we're definitely willing to consider. Something we might quickly auto pass on, just so you know, when you're thinking of a note, what maybe not to send to First National, every note I'm going to tell you is viable with the right investor. So if you're brokering or you're coming into this industry, just find the investor that is going to fit for those note needs, right? You don't want to let a note or a lead go to waste, but for these ones, these are something that you might just not want to send to us. Non-performing notes, because they're not performing, and we're that performing note buyer. Properties such as cannabis, we're federally regulated banks, so we have lots of money to spend out on our notes, but we do have to stay within compliance. So if it's tied with marijuana or anything along those lines, we would be a pass of those. Place of worship, we're an auto pass on, and all of these are passes mainly for resellable purposes for us. We've dabbled in these markets, besides the cannabis, obviously, but we've dabbled in other collateral, and for us, reselling, our money sits for a while, and we just kind of can't get our money out. So places of worship, they're kind of a tough resale when you have the crosses or whatnot. Vacant commercial property, if it's commercial, it should be, you know, making capital. And if it's vacant, usually you're not having a whole lot of capital come. So those are something we would pass on. Mobile home parks, gas stations. We've seen a lot of it after COVID happened. Nudist colonies are another one. they're out there, but we're a pass, mainly because if we have to resell it, there's not a whole lot of market for that one.
Too much exposure.
That's a good one. Too much exposure, yes. So things like that, you know, gas stations for us, we really tried with those, but environmental concerns, anything that could seep into the ground, funeral homes. I'm not 100% sure if anyone's worked with us before, but if you were working with us 20 years ago, we did buy the funeral home that they did have to carry dead bodies out of the property, and our underwriters just were not happy, and we've not messed with them since then. So if it's dead, we like to say it stays in the dead. Cemeteries along those lines, too. We would be a pass on these.
Why are you passing on gas?
So sometimes gas leaks underground, similar as like laundromats, when all of that chemical goes underground, then they create environmental concerns. And then when you have an environmental concern, you also have to pay hefty fines to get them going again. And it just, for us, it just didn't fit for that. But good question. So when you are submitting a note, this is good for any investor, truly. For us, we do really like this information, but I recommend getting all the information you can to any of your investors. If you are going to work those non-performing loans, tell them how long it's been non-performing, maybe why it's been non-performing. For us, if you have these items, so it should be the address. And I know note terms is pretty vague, so it should be maybe the sale price, the down payment, that interest rate, the monthly payment amount. Is there an escrow? If there is an escrow, great. Servicing information, that's a really good one, especially if your borrower or your seller is the one paying for that servicing fee, to let your investor know up front for any fees that they might not traditionally account for. Anything could be very good with this. So we buy vacant land. Sometimes vacant land does not have an address. That's why we put parcel there. I will say parcels are a little hard to find. If you just shot me a parcel, including the county and state, would be super helpful. Unique characteristics is a good one. Maybe it's vacant land, but it has a great septic system or a great water system, or maybe has, I think we've seen like trees that have very good income for them. Just anything else you can present then is really good for us. If you have a social security number, great. If you tell me right away that they're I-10 borrowers, it saves us a little bit of time searching for those social security numbers. Yes?
I have a question. The parcel, does it matter if it's landlocked or not?
It does. So that's a good one. And I think it's in something else. So we cannot buy landlocked because we can't get title insurance on that one. So that would be one we would not be able to purchase. However, logging trails, we've learned if it's not necessarily a traditional like state paved road or whatnot, but they have actual logging trails and we can get title insurance, that would be something we could still move forward with. Yeah, great question. Name of your purchasers, first and last name is always a good one, especially if you know this is land property. I'm not going to find the borrower most likely at the land, right? So trying to give us their physical address or that P.O. box will really help try to get you the best quote up front. Current balance is a good one. Sometimes people pay early or extra. So if you send me a note and you give me only the terms, I'm going to assume they're paying just by that term. I'm not going to know if they're delinquent. I'm not going to know if they're paying extra. So any additional information is great. Especially this underlying debt, guys. And we're going to get into this really soon. For those of you who don't know, underlying debt is when you have a mortgage wrapped by another mortgage. And for me to come in and buy, I need to be in first lien position. So I need to know of any other mortgages that need to be paid off, usually with the seller's proceeds. And for me to know that balance is really good because it knows... it helps me be able to create a possible partial offer and or to let me know if I can make any offer at all to pay off any underlying debt. This is a good one for me. Building rapport always gets you more. The more information you know, the more information you know about your seller, you guys are going to have such a good relationship when you guys get off the phone. They'll want to keep coming back to you to continue to talk to you. When I would get on the phone with people, one of my favorite questions to ask is, can you describe how the borrowers use the property? The reason why that's a good one is I've seen a lot of houses, and I think that they're houses, but then we do appraisals. And they are insurance companies all of a sudden, or they're massage companies all of a sudden, which is great. So that just lets me know that this might have been zoned now as commercial or something additional. So it might need to be appraised differently or valued differently or priced differently. So those are good questions instead of, are they current? Yeah. Is the property a home? Yeah. That kind of doesn't get you a whole lot of the seller talking to explain the situation, to explain why they called. The more you can get them to keep talking, the easier it's going to be for you guys to flow into that conversation to get their file accepted, to go from an accepted offer to a closed deal. If anyone, has anyone bought a note in here before or brokered a note? Okay, so that path can be bumpy sometimes, right? Appraisals come in and have an issue. Sometimes title work becomes an issue. Hi, welcome. Okay. So sometimes that road can be a little helpy, and continuing to speak with that seller and reminding them why they called you, why they wanted that offer, is going to be really good for you guys to navigate that path together. So that could be a question of the what financial goal are you looking to achieve by selling your note? That could be a great one, or how did your seller obtain this property? That's a really good one, too. Sometimes people come to us and say, well, I just bought it at a quick tax sale, and I immediately resold it. That's a good indication for me to know if it's a quick flip, if there was any improvements done, how we could help value it or assume a value or help with the transaction as well. Any questions? Okay. I would try. We get asked a lot, Elena and I, we have spent a lot of money for the bank and we've closed lots of deals together. So people come to us all the time and ask us for best tips. And I'm going to tell you the number one is to learn partials. I think if you ask other people, they would say maybe leads. We have people find leads all types of ways. Word of mouth is still a thing too, everyone. I ask for business all the time. So that's great. I tell people who I've closed a deal with, you know, let your friends or family know. And it's surprising how many contracts are out there. So if you're going to use a lead list, I would suggest let your investor know. For example, PaperStack, DevExpert, NotesDirect, those are all free ways to find free leads, which are great. We love working with these people. They're great guys. However, not everything on these platforms is for us. And what I mean by that is they have a lot of non-performing, they have a lot of third liens, they have a lot of business equipment, things like that that we just would not be the ones to dabble in, which is all fine. In addition, they also have fees. So knowing where these are coming from to make sure these people, individuals, are properly paid is really good for your investor to know up front. There were a few other ones. Verifiable proof of payments. I think any investor would really like to see that, especially if it's within 12 to 15 months and part of the equity is substantial in that down payment. You can come in. It's fine. Hi, welcome. Some people might not know this. I'm working with a new broker right now. It's his very first deal with us. He wasn't aware that the seller was in an LLC. So he wasn't aware that we also needed the LLC documents. So just learning things, right? So if you have a seller and it's seller trust, then you'll think, oh, okay, I need not only my seller to be able to sell, but I need to see those trust documents. So those are really good tips for us. They're going to want to see the note, the mortgage, or the contract that we're purchasing. Now, we get to get creative. That's the only slide on that. Strawberry Lane. Broker sent us in a deal. Looks like the balance was this $365,000 figure. For that balance, I said, okay, Mr. Broker, I'm going to pay you this $276,000 figure. Seller accepted it for whatever reason. They needed the money. And I also pitched this 50-month partial. And they said, nope, maybe I'm not interested in that. I kind of don't understand that. But they didn't dislike it. Because if you look at the spread for this balance, I offered $79.8 for the balance of $90. Mental math, that's a little bit of a lighter spread than to take that 276 figure up with a balance still owed of the 365. Hi, welcome. Come on in. It's fine. Okay, bye. I don't know. Credit has to be reviewed or has been reviewed. So this is my quote. This is what a real quote looks like. It's a fake ID on a fake address. I think Elaine and I were talking about strawberries that day, so I used that for the address. But those were real figures. When you do send us a quote, this is something that you're going to receive with first payment blank with a paid through date of this dollar amount. So we moved forward. And then the deal died because the property didn't value. I thought it died. I said, hi, your property valued about $40,000 less than what you assured me it would value for. But my underwriters came back and said that they would still do that partial offer that I offered. So the full buyout's off the table. Mr. Broker knew that Ms. Seller needed a certain dollar amount because she really needed some financial cash flow, whatever it might have been, pay off some medical debt, put money down for a new home, or whatever it might have been. Has anyone used a financial calculator in here before? Okay, perfect. So whenever you're working off these numbers, you're going to plug in the interest rate for your eye, the amount of payments we're collecting is going to be that end figure, your balance that we're buying is going to be that $90,000 figure, and then when you solve it, this is going to be your payment stream here coming. So you're going to come up with that $2,006 figure. That's kind of how we pitch them. You can get this Mr. Seller $90,000 today, opposed to collecting over some time. And sometimes they say, well, if you take 50, multiply it by 2006, that doesn't equal that. It's because you need to use your financial calculator and factor in that interest rate. Does that make sense? Okay, perfect. I love visuals. That previous slide that you just saw, that's all you're going to get from me. And it's kind of, it's a little plain, right? So a lot of people understand visuals. One of my brokers, this is one of their preferred ways to send them. They say, and it's not because of the animals, but they'll say, okay, you have all of these chickens. All of these chickens, or ducks, or cows, or whatever is your favorite animal to use, you have all of those in one note. Every chicken is one payment. I'm going to give you all the blue right now. When you see all of that blue, you're not so worried about the little bit of red that you're not going to collect sometimes. So they really pride themselves in really like something could be visualized. And I would really encourage you to send something additional with any seller that you possibly can. Again, my amortization is not super great, but these visuals will really help you show what they're collecting now and moving forward. This is another really good graph. When I have another broker, and they like to send, some of these numbers are a little different, but the concept is they'll send a visualization of this and say, okay, Mr. Seller, you've already received all of these for your payments that you've collected already. You've received a chunk for your down payment, and then this chunk is what I'm going to offer you today. And it's a great explanation, showing them how much they've collected with their down payment, showing the seller how much they've collected on payments already, showing them the cash offer they've already or they're going to receive from you are going to be some solid indicators to say, okay, well, you know what, you are right. I have collected quite a bit of money already. I'm collecting this lump sum from you, especially if it's a partial, to show like any remaining that's after is a really good one as well. So we are a bank. We buy lots of paper, and a lot of people think we only buy stick-built homes, and that's not true. We have bought homes that have animals, farms, that have been turned into petting zoos. We have bought land that have been turned into bike tracks. We have bought land, or we bought, a file that had a massive tax lien on it. That had good equity and a good purchaser interview, so we were still able to go move forward. We've had a broker submit us a file, and they were like, it's a beautiful log house. And it was just a house built into a tree house. But it was actually really, really nice. And they had somehow had random electricity through it, and they were making like their own garden section area. You could tell the borrower themselves truly loved the collateral, and we were still able to move forward, and there was a good enough land value, and we were still able to close a transaction like that. So we are not just a traditional, it has to be just a home, a really nice collateral. Having good land, having a good borrower or land value and a really good borrower is really good. I recently closed a commercial property we thought was very funny. Half of it was an insurance company, and then right next door on it, same borrower on both of them. They just only sold chicken food. So just great things that we were able to have. Yeah?
I'm curious why you don't like wrap loans. Why you tap that underlying?
We want to be first lien. If we have to foreclose, we want to have the first right away. Sorry, yeah, okay. Understood. I'm good. So this is one of our QR code and our website to get over to us. I'm Rachel. This is Elena Kinney. Joe Waters in the back, and a lot of you met Dawn earlier today. We are absolutely happy to answer any of your questions that we could. Oh, yeah. Take your time, snap the QR code. When you go to that QR code, you are going to go and see like how to become a broker with First National. So there's three documents to fill out, a vetting checklist. We're making sure that that you guys just aren't having money laundering, and honestly, making sure that's okay. Your W-9, and just to become an approved broker with us. It does not cost you anything to be approved broker with us. So First National is going to pay for your title work, your evaluations, and then fund you your broker money. Or if you're selling, you're selling money as well.
Are you national?
Yes. Yep. So Elena, Joe, and I all sit in East Lansing, Michigan, but we buy all over the United States.
Yep. Okay, so I've got a question here maybe on this topic. But I'm looking at the title of the presentation, Make Money from Notes Without Buying Notes. It sounds like everything that you've just described is if you bought the note and then were using you as the broker. So
so it's kind of our money. So we would be the one funding the seller, funding the broker their money, and then we fund the title company and the appraisals. So you would be bringing us a transaction. Sometimes you could utilize it for one of the free platforms or if you have a marketing list, but you'd send it to us and no cost to close it. First National would fund the loan and fund the closing.
So it's like wholesaling. Oh, okay. Same thing. Okay, but with notes.
Yes. Or contracts. Notes, contracts.
What does the average broker make on a transaction?
I would say $6,500. Up to, we've had a broker recently close and make a $40,000 commission.
So I'm going to ask questions to you guys, because I don't know, but it's good for you guys to know. When you actually close a transaction, how they get funded separately from the people. So we actually, and I think she kind of said it, the title company, we wire the money to the title company, they close it at the title company. So let's say we are funding the seller $85,000 and you're making the $6,500 the broker is. We do that separate. So you, as a broker, the customer or the buyer has no idea that you're not the bank.
Oh, yeah. Like if you were brokering it, you would sign a document with us, and then the seller would sign your agreement showing what they're netting. Yep. Yeah. Hi. Yeah.
Is this just for investors or anyone who wants
to buy? So this would be for us to buy the loan, but this is for anybody. You do not have to be like licensed to broker to First National because the bank is the one buying at the end of the day, so you don't need to put any money into that. And anybody's welcome to broker or sell from their own portfolio if they wanted.
What were some of the things that you would not make a note on or would not accept an offer on? You had that prohibited or?
Sure. Federal cannabis would be one. Oh, you sure? Can you flip it back? Cannabis. I don't think cemeteries are listed. Churches were, but gas stations, anything that's going to be probably a really hard resale for us or have any type of environmental concerns.
But on the acceptable ones, you had mobile homes, didn't you?
Yes, we buy mobile homes with land. Mobile home parks are usually where there's more than five. We had issues with like water, sewage, damage, things like that. So we stay away from mobile home parks. But mobile homes with land, a single one here or there. And we've seen a few that maybe have two or three on one parcel. That's something that we could consider. We wouldn't consider that a park, but probably like a rental property. But when the county classifies it as a mobile home park, those are the ones we'd probably stay away from. Yeah. Hi.
I own a property that is like, I think 12 acres with a mobile home on it.
Okay.
And if I would do seller financing, what rate are you all expecting and everything if I would want to sell it then to you all?
Is the property or is the value, if we did an evaluation on it, would we get more value in your land or your mobile home attached to the land? Or would the mobile home not have much of value?
It's actually a modular home from like 2020,
so it'd probably have value. Yeah, we would classify that as a mobile home, and we would probably want to see at least a 7% rate, but we do buy down to a 0% rate. So term wise, our perfect terms would probably be well over 7%, a 20% equity position that the borrower has, so that could be a 20% down, or it could be payments over time. It's just a little bit less riskier if they have that equity. And then if credit is probably north of 600 with maybe a 15-year term, 20-year term. We do buy 40-year term, but we do really want to see more equity into those ones. Yeah, great question. Yeah.
You bought it performing notes if there's a balloon payment, a certain, like,
5 or 10 years?
We do. We can buy, make a full buyout offer to completely remove you from the transaction. We can make an offer to buy up until the balloon, and we can make an offer to buy a portion of that balloon payment. So we could, maybe your balloon's due in the 10-year time frame, but it's a 30-year term. We could still come in to make an offer to buy 15 years of that note.
With that said, that's a great question. If you have a let's say a 20-year note with a 5-year balloon, first, let's say we had a 20-year note and there was no balloon, are you going to pay the same amount with a 5-year balloon on that 20-year?
No.
Are you going to pay more if there's a balloon?
Yes.
So we prefer balloons. If we see a 5-year balloon, we can be more aggressive with our pricing. We can be more aggressive.
Okay. Yeah, good call. We do like balloons. If for some reason the borrower feels like they can't meet it, we are happy to help amend it, remove it if need be, so they're not stuck or anything also. So we're definitely here to help the borrower. We're definitely here to help the seller. And we're happy to help anybody who's looking to broker too. Yeah.
You mentioned a few of the things. What else is inside of your buy box? Because you mentioned your buy box a few times, and you just talked about north of 600 in time frames. So
my buy box changes often. If you were to tell me, if Joe wasn't listening, I would say you have to have credit over 575, and it has to have 15 or 20% equity. But Joe's here, and he understands that I've closed a lot of deals, and he knows why. I'm happy to look at any file that has a good payment history. We've recently closed one at 502 credit. The borrower has been there for the last, I think, 8 years. The equity position was over 50%. I want to say there was still 15 years left to go, it's a longer term, but we spoke with that purchaser. They have no problem making the payments. We understood what was happening with their credit. So that's not something that would be traditionally in our buy box, but there are other things that made it worth everyone's while to still proceed.
And how long of a payment history do you need to see? Because you also mentioned that they were non-performing and now they're re-performing. So
yeah, great question. So I would tell you that we should see it. So we are buyers. We are not able to originate any type of note. So we are only buyers. We do need to see at least one payment be made, and it keeps us from being mixed up with originating of it. Mm-hmm. Good question.
If you have a note that's over 12 months, can you take the appraised value?
Do you mean if it sold at $100,000 and you bring it to me after 12 months? Yes, I'm going to assume that $100,000 value. Unless you come to me and say, hi, I sold this house. My borrower put a brand new roof on it. My borrower repaved the driveway and put new siding on it. Then I would consider a higher value possibly on that one. But typically, if you send us a note within 12 months of being originated, we're going to assume that original sale price.
But if it's 2 years old, are we going to take that appraised value?
We're going to hopefully appraise a bit more so I can offer you more money.
So sometimes if it goes over 12 months and we get an appraisal, I mean, let's say it's worth $40,000 more than it originally was, we can actually take that equity, that extra $40,000, and Rachel and Elena can actually be more aggressive in the pricing. And we can use that. It's not fake equity, but when we see that value, we can utilize it. So it's not all dependent on that down payment.
Yeah.
Bouncing off that last question, if I had a note like that where the borrower did put some, like a new roof on or something, how are you going to go get an appraisal if I don't want them to know what I'm going to sell?
Good question. We don't want them to know either, especially if they have really good credit, because I'm going to try everything to let them know until I've bought it and send them my welcome letter. We're going to send an evaluation out, an appraising agent licensed in that area, and they're going to do a broker price opinion appraisal. So it's called a BPO. They're going to drive right by that home before they really take a stop. They're going to take some photos of it really quick for me, not go inside, not go on that property. And then they're going to run comps from the area, preferably within 5 miles or less. And send me an appraised value on it that the bank pays for. All right. Are you shooting any other questions at me?
I know you have them.
A few things. Yeah, go ahead.
What if the BPO, like, for the
that, when they drive by, it maybe looks super sketchy on the outside, but the inside is all brand new.
They, so I will say it has happened a time or two. We've closed a lot of deals, and we don't always know what's on the inside. Pride of ownership is really big for the bank. So if we do an appraised value and maybe the outside, it just looks, maybe it hasn't been power washed, that's something we can get over. So it may be valued less. But you, the seller, sends me all these photos that, hey, I did all of these things. Here are my receipts. I redid the inside before I sold this thing. We can consider those inside interiors. An agent's not going to because they didn't see that. And then obviously if it's on the it's messed up on the inside, we probably won't ever know unless the purchaser tells us. So that happens, and we have underwriters for that and compliance. But if we were to drive by and maybe there's a lot of trash in the yard or there's holes in the roof or something along those lines, that might be something we would pass on in general. Yeah.
Can you kind of give an example of what we just did?
Which one?
The one that appraised, and then we actually got permission to do an inside appraisal.
Oh, yeah. And the so I had a file recently that I just closed. It's a high dollar deal. We did an exterior appraisal only. Amy drove by. House looks great, but it undervalued by probably about $100,000. I came back to my broker and said, hey, this didn't value. Well, it turns out the seller did a ton of high-end interior upgrades to the home, like beautiful vaulted ceilings, black staircase,
chandeliers. It was nice.
Cabinetry in the kitchen. It was amazing. So we actually got permission to do an inside appraisal, which the borrower had to agree to. And so we got the interior appraisal done, the property value, the great sale price, and we closed on the 30th.
And I know it might sound scary letting your borrowers know that somebody's going to take over the loan, but it happens all the time without people knowing. In traditional financing, your car loans, your credit cards, all of those items are getting sold. And for most of the time, borrowers are okay with the bank getting involved because they know that we're going to help report their payments to the credit bureau, so we're going to increase their credit. We can help them at tax time. We can help refinance those loans. So there's a lot of benefits that borrowers truly do like for us to get involved with, too. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say I bring a note to you for a quote. I've asked the seller some questions. I'm led to believe everything's being paid on time.
Kind of sounds like we're getting locked in.
You might be, I asked him to lock the door.
Oh, okay, sorry.
You do your due diligence and you find out the payer is behind on either insurance or taxes. How do you handle that?
So, insurance, we're going to give them 45 days after. I'm going to still try and close your loan. I'm sales. I'm going to try and find a way. If the purchaser's like, I just let it lapse, you know, I'll get it figured out. But at the end of the day, I don't always have to have proof for your insurance because I'm going to give you 45 days for your borrower to get me the insurance after I close your loan because it should be in your note and mortgage that they are required to have insurance. So as long as your note and mortgage calls that I can call, make sure they have insurance, I can have that handled. Taxes, though, are a little bit different because taxes go reported with the county and other people can put liens and buy them out. So we have lots of scenarios along those lines. Sometimes people are already on a payment plan with the county. The title office is comfortable with it, they'll let us close. Sometimes it truly is up to the title office. They can't transfer, especially on land contracts, property ownership when taxes are delinquent. So we can also add that balance back to the loan. So they are short $4,000, we can add it back to the loan. Usually they're okay with that because they're no longer like paying the higher accrued interest or whatnot, and then the taxes are current because we paid them at closing and then added that to the back of the loan. There are some times when, depending on how far delinquent it is, we can let it slide depending on the state and if it's a note and mortgage type. It depends on the dollar amount, really. But there are definitely still ways, lots of ways to still close the deal.
So it's not automatically thrown?
No, yeah, no. No, I mean, if you brought me a brand new note, well, I was going to say, it's usually if it was a seller's responsibility in that case, so we were able to handle out. Like, if it's a seller's responsibility, we're always going to make the seller pay for that.
Alarm,
yeah.
It's a year-old contract.
Yeah.
$3,000 delinquent on their taxes.
Yeah.
That you
kind of go, okay, we've got to figure this out.
Yeah, sometimes we can set up an escrow.
We want them to be our payors.
Right. Sometimes we can set up an escrow or something like that, too, to help everybody get comfortable moving on. But again, if it's that seller's responsibility within the 12 months, we're going to have them pay for that.
Yep. With the insurance, too, and we have to, by law, we have to give them 45 days to produce that insurance. Yeah. And our packet that goes out says, hey, we need your insurance. If they don't have it after 45 days, we can put forced place coverage on that. So that's why they're able to go ahead and buy those. Unfortunately, that forced place coverage is covering us. It's not covering the people that live in the house, which is unfortunate, but yeah. They're paying it. They're going to be paying that $84 a month or whatever.
Yeah, but if your note or mortgage doesn't call for the insurance, and that's something that we would have to have amended, and then your borrower is going to find out because we're telling them that they need to make sure they have insurance on the property.
Yeah, we have to follow up the contract to a T. So yeah. Whatever it is what exactly we can do.
Yep, yep. We're getting a little bit easier on flood insurance. Flood insurance is going through national laws, so we don't always have to have proof of flood insurance if you are in a flood zone up front anymore. But your borrowers will eventually have to be making payments on that soon.
Yep. I would highly recommend, though, if you are doing contracts in a flood zone or people have houses in a flood zone, to make sure that they do, because it's tough to do anything without having that. We're getting better at it, but we only have so much flexibility.
I agree. Good call. Yeah.
What's your threshold on loan to value part of your money?
Can you use the microphone? We can't hear back there. Sure. What was your question?
Threshold on loan to value.
So loan to values. Loan to values are going to be different depending on collateral type. When it comes to commercial, we want to see a 70% or 30% equity, vice versa. We say ITV for when we're investing on it. So we won't go over 60% ITV on commercial. When it comes to residential, we can go all the way up to 85, so just a 15% there. Yep. Land, I want to say it depends, but I think we're in the 70-75 range for ITV for land, right?
Yeah, every 65 for mobile homes, right?
Yep, yep, yep.
That's why what I said earlier, after 12 months, we can take that appraised value. Sometimes we can't do a transaction because the LTV or the ITV, loan to value, doesn't work, but after 12 months, if that appraises for more, it now fits into that window where we can buy it to be more aggressive the price for the people, for you guys.
All right, can we help maybe answer anything else tonight? Yeah, you in the back, sir.
Other place I know, so we're talking about notes mostly in residential. Do you need to do anything for office, commercial, or retail?
We love office commercial buildings. We love those. And so, yes, we will buy commercial property, not commercial equipment, not the commercial LLC or anything along those lines, but the actual brick and mortar of the commercial collateral we will buy. Vacant land, it's something we'll dabble into along with the mobile homes as well. Yeah.
How have you been seeing that market the last 3 years with what's going on, specifically with office commercial?
For commercial? So I'll be honest, the bank never really, I shouldn't say never really, the bank's appetite was not super large in commercial in our history. However, this year we've closed over, I want to say 40%. Of an increase in commercial loans. So every single month that usually at least one of our analysts have two or three commercial files that they're purchasing. Yep. A lot of times, I'll be honest, they're going to be those partials. Commercial is just a riskier collateral, especially if it's a new commercial, a new business. It's a generated revenue. So that's going to be something you'll strongly see us most likely do a partial transaction on. Yes, sir?
Right. In 2008, they had the residential mortgage crisis.
Sure.
What's your read on?
I think it's going to be okay for us because when we've been buying for over 50 years now, and we have so much data to know what commercial is truly performing. Sometimes people won't do like a blueberry farm or things like that, but we will. I know it's kind of a commercial, but we're understanding better what's getting backed by federal government, especially what we've seen with COVID. COVID happened, and the first people to receive any benefits were commercial lenders, right? Commercial borrowers, people who had businesses were getting helped out tremendously by the government. I'm sorry, what was that?
A lot of commercial default rates going on right now.
Oh, I'm sorry about those other items, but for us, we are under a default rate of 2%. We're going to do purchaser interviews on 90% of our commercial loans, the commercial notes that we're buying. So, and most of our commercial borrowers, they've been in business for well over 2 years or so, and we're invested to a certain amount that our investment is safe if things did go south.
That's why we do partials. That's the reason we do partials, so we're not totally on the risk. The risk is on.
Right, but if you want to be a second position on a commercial property that's worth $12 billion, then if you're on a primary loan, it's allowed to swipe.
Well, we have
that. Yeah, that wouldn't be a loan for us in general, yes, sir. We would be that first lien. I don't think they did their due diligence correctly when they did the loan.
No.
I don't have the read on what they're going to do, but I have the read that First National is going to continue to thrive. Can I possibly answer anything else? Yes, sir.
I think from my understanding, they're going to have it here. Oria's going to have it.
Okay.
I know we had to sign off on that, so they're going to have our slides.
Oh, great.
So that's how I understand it.
And you're welcome to email us, too, if you guys have questions or maybe need a slide or two to remind you for anything,
yeah,
too.
Grab yep. our business cards at the desk, and we can email it to you.
Yeah.
Do you need to establish an account with you before transacting?
You will, yes, sir. So the question was, do you need to establish like becoming a broker with us? And the question is yes, or the answer is yes. This QR code is going to take you to our broker site. There will be one document that I absolutely need you to fill out, and that's going to be your vetting. And that's, again, I'm going to check you to make sure you're not money laundering or have other issues or something like that. So then we can approve to fund you on deals that you might not be originating. If you're a seller direct, we don't have to have you go through that profile. It's just for brokering deals. Yep. Great question. All right. Well, I think there's food in the back, and you guys have a great night. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.